Protocol 15, Ruthless Suppression. 1. We shall come into our kingdom by the aid of a sudden overthrow of a government, done by our small group and carried out everywhere at once and all within a single day. It may be a while before this takes place, perhaps even a whole century. But when at last this definitely happens, and has been definitely acknowledged, we shall make it our job to see that things such as plots against us shall no longer exist. With this purpose we shall slay without mercy all who take up arms to oppose our coming into our kingdom. Every kind of new institution which is anything like a secret society will also be punished with death. Those of them which are now in existence are known to us, they serve us and have served us. We shall dissolve these and send their members into exile to continents far removed from Europe. In this way we shall deal with those goymasons who know too much, some of whom we may spare for some reason, and they will be kept in constant fear of exile. We shall formally declare a law making all former members of secret societies liable to exile from Europe, which will be the center of our rule. 2. Resolutions of our government will be final, and without appeal. 3. The disagreement and Protestantism we planted in the Goy societies has now taken deep root. The only possible way of restoring order is to employ merciless measures that prove the effectiveness of the direct force of authority. No concern must be given to the victims who fall. They suffer for the well-being of the future. Achieving that state of well-being, even at the expense of sacrifices, is the duty of any kind of government that acknowledges as justification for its existence, not only its privileges but its obligations. The best way to guarantee stability of rule is to reinforce the aura of power, and this aura is gained only by displaying such a convincing stubbornness of might that it shall carry the banner of invincibility from mystical causes on its face, from the choice of God. It was like this until recent times, when the Russian autocracy was the one and only serious foe we had in the world, not counting the Pope. Bear in mind the example when Italy, drenched with blood, never touched a hair on the head of Sulla who had poured forth that blood. Sulla enjoyed a godlike status for the might in him, but his fearless return to Italy made him appear sacred and invincible. The people do not lay a finger on someone who hypnotizes them by his daring and mental strength. Secret societies. 4. Meanwhile, however, before we come into our kingdom, we shall act in the contrary way. We shall create and multiply Freemasonic lodges in all the countries of the world and bring all types of people into them, people who may become or who are already prominent in public activity. In these lodges we shall find our principal intelligence office and means of influence. We shall bring all these lodges under one central administration which known to us alone and absolutely unknown to all others, and which will be composed of our learned elders. Their lodges will have their representatives who will serve to screen the above-mentioned administration of Masonry and who will issue the watchword and program. In these lodges we shall tie the knot which binds together all revolutionary and liberal elements. They will come from all levels of society. The most secret political plots will be known to us and fall under our guiding hands on the very day of their conception. Among the members of these lodges will be almost all the agents of international and national police, since their service for us is irreplaceable based on the fact that the police are in a position to not only use their own particular measures with members who are insubordinate, but also to screen our activities and provide pretexts for discontents, etc. 5. The classes of people who most willingly enter into secret societies are those who live by their wits, the career-seeking types, and in general, mostly light-minded people, with whom we shall have no difficulty in dealing with and in using to wind up the mechanism of the machine devised by us. If this world grows agitated, it is because we have had to stir it up in order to break up its too great solidarity. But if a plot should arise in its midst, then the person in charge of that plot will be none other than one of our most trusted servants. It is natural that no one else other than us should lead Masonic activities, for we know where we are heading, we know the final goal of every type of activity. whereas the goyim have knowledge of nothing, not even of the immediate effect of an action. They usually only consider the momentary satisfaction which comes from the accomplishment of their thoughts. They don't notice that their thoughts didn't arise from their own initiative but from ideas which we planted in their heads. Gentiles are stupid. 6. The goyim enter the lodges out of curiosity or in the hope, by using their resources, of getting a piece of the public by, and some of them in order to obtain a hearing before the public for their impracticable and groundless fantasies. They thirst for the emotion of success and applause, and we always generously applaud them. And the reason why we give them this success is that it gives them an overrated opinion of themselves, which we can then make use of. This conceit unconsciously causes them to include our suggestions into theirs without being on their guard against them. They are fully confident that it is their own infallibility which is giving rise to their own thoughts and that it is impossible for them to borrow those of others. You cannot imagine to what extent the wisest of the goyim can be brought to a state of unconscious simple-mindedness in the presence of this condition of high conceit of themselves, and at the same time how easy it is to take the heart out of them by the slightest ill success, even though it be nothing more than the lack of the applause which they previously had, and to reduce them to a slavish submission for the sake of winning a renewal of success. We ourselves can disregard success so long as we are able to carry through our long-term plans. The goyim, on the other hand, are willing to sacrifice long-term plans in order to have success. This psychology of theirs assists and enables us to set them in the required direction. These tigers in appearance have the souls of sheep and the wind blows freely through their heads. We have set them on the hobby horse of an idea about the absorption of individuality into the symbolic unit of communism. They have never yet, and never will, have the sense to realize that this hobby horse is a clear violation of the most important law of nature, that it has created an entity quite different from any other since the very creation of the world, and that its only purpose is to control individuality. 7. Isn't the fact that we have been able to bring them to such an extent of stupid blindness a proof, and an amazingly clear proof, of the degree to which the mind of the goyim is undeveloped in comparison with our own mind? Yes, it is, and this is what mainly guarantees our success. Gentiles are cattle. 8. And how far-sighted were our learned elders in ancient times when they said that to attain a serious end it is essential not to stop at any means or to count the victims sacrificed for the sake of that end. We have not counted the victims of the ancestry of the Goy cattle, and we have sacrificed many of our own. But in exchange for that we have now given them such a position on the earth as they could not even have dreamed of. The comparatively small numbers of the victims of our own people has preserved our nationality from destruction. 9. Everyone has to die some day. So it is better that those who hinder our affairs die much sooner than us, since we are the founders of this plan. We execute masons in such a clever way that no one other than us, the Brotherhood, can ever suspect anything, not even the victims of our death sentence. They all die when required as if from natural causes. Knowing this, even the Brotherhood dare not protest. Using these methods we have removed the very root of protest against our management style out of the midst of the masonry. While preaching liberalism to the Goy, at the same time we keep our own people and our agents in a state of unquestioning submission. 10. Under our influence the laws of the goyim are rarely followed. The prestige of the law has been destroyed by the liberal interpretations introduced into this area. When it comes to the most important and fundamental affairs and questions, judges make the rulings that we tell them to make, and we surround them with information that tells them how to view matters so that they can be the administration of the goyim. Of course, we carry out our work via persons who are our tools, and these people do not appear to have anything in common with us, for example by using newspaper opinions or by other means. Even senators and the higher administration accept our opinions and ideas. The undeveloped mind of the goyim is incapable of doing analysis and observation, and even less capable of predicting where a certain manner of wording a law may lead. 11. Based on this difference in capacity for thought between the goyim and ourselves, it clearly marks us as being in our rightful position as the chosen people and of a higher quality of humanness, in opposing contrast to the brute mind of the goyim. Their eyes are open, but they see nothing before them and do not invent, unless perhaps, material things. From this it is plain that nature herself has destined us to guide and rule the world. We demand submission. 12. When the time comes for our overt rule, the time to manifest its blessing, we shall rewrite all legislation. All our laws will be brief, plain, stable, without any kind of interpretations, so that anyone will be in a position to know them perfectly. The main feature which will run right through them is submission to orders, and this principle will be carried to a grandiose height. Every abuse will then disappear as a result of the orders being enforced via a long chain of hierarchy of authority, leading from the lowest unit up to the highest representative of power. Subordinates of this highest representative who abuse their power will be so mercilessly punished that no one will be anxious to experiment with their own powers. We shall eagerly follow up every action of the administration which the smooth running of the machinery of the state depends upon, for slackness in this produces slackness everywhere. Not a single case of illegality or abuse of power will go without a punishment designed to also serve as a strong warning. 13. Concealment of guilt, encouragement of wrongdoing between those in the service of the administration, all this kind of evil will disappear after the very first examples of severe punishment. The aura of our power demands suitable, that is, cruel, punishments for the slightest infringement, and we do this to improve the prestige of our supreme power. The sufferer, though his punishment may exceed his offense, will be counted as a soldier falling on the administrative field of battle in the interest of authority, principle and law. Our principles do not permit that any of those who hold the reins of the public coach should exit from the public highway to their own private roads. For example, our judges will know that whenever they feel disposed to pride themselves by handing out foolish pardons, they are violating the law of justice which was established for the moral education of men by giving punishment for wrongdoing, and not for displaying the spiritual qualities of the judges. Such qualities are proper to show in private life, but not in a public square which is the educational base of human life. 14. Our legal staff will serve not beyond the age of 55, firstly because old men more obstinately hold to prejudiced opinions, and are less capable of submitting to new directions, and secondly because this will give us the possibility of securing flexibility in the changing of staff, who will then more easily bend under our pressure. He who wishes to keep his place will have to give us blind obedience to deserve it. In general, our judges will be elected by us and only from among those who thoroughly understand that the part they have to play is to punish and apply laws, and not to dream about the manifestations of liberalism at the expense of the educational scheme of the state, as the goyim these days imagine it to be. This method of shuffling the staff will also serve to break apart any collective solidarity of those in the same service and will bind them all to the interests of the government upon which their fate will depend. The young generation of judges will be trained to have certain views regarding the inadmissibility of any abuses which might disturb the established order of our subjects among themselves. 15. Nowadays the judges of the goyim are tolerant toward every kind of crime. They don't have a proper understanding of their office because the rulers of today, when appointing judges, take no care to implant a sense of duty and consciousness in them toward the actions which are demanded of them. Just as a savage beast lets out its young in search of prey, so do the unthinking rulers let out their poorly trained judges to make bad decisions on cases of crime. Goyim then behave in a criminal manner that fits the purpose for which these judges' positions were created. This is the reason why their governments are being ruined by their own forces through the acts of their own administration. 16. Let us use the results of these actions as an example for yet another lesson for our government. 17. We shall root out liberalism from all the important strategic posts of our government which are in charge of the training of subordinates of our state structure. Such posts will be assigned exclusively to those who have been trained by us for administrative rule. To the possible objection that the retirement of old servants will cost the treasury heavily, I reply, firstly, that they will be provided with some private service in place of what they lose, and secondly, I need to point out that all the money in the world will be concentrated in our hands. So it is not our government which needs to fear the expense. We shall be cruel. 18. Our totalitarianism will have all the components of its structure logically arranged, and therefore our superiority will be respected and unquestionably fulfilled in each one of its decrees. It will ignore all complaints, all disagreements of every kind, and will destroy the root of every kind of manifestation of them by punishments that are publicly visible. 19. We shall abolish the right of judges to annul our rulings. This right will be transferred exclusively to us, to the jurisdiction of the ruler, for we must not ever allow the people to think that there could be such a thing as a decision which is considered wrong in the eyes of the judges who were appointed by us. But if anything like this should occur, we shall void the decision ourselves, and then inflict explicit punishment on the judge for failing to understand his duty and the purpose of his appointment. The punishment must be sufficient to prevent a repetition of such cases. I repeat that it must be deep-seated in our minds that we shall know every part of our administration. This administration only needs to be closely watched in order for the people to be content with us. For the people have the right to demand that good officials come from a good government. 20. Our government's ruler will have the appearance of a father figure guardian. Our own nation and our subjects will see in him a father caring for their every need, their every act, their every interrelation as subjects with one another, as well as their relations to the ruler. They will then be so thoroughly filled with the thought that it is impossible for them to dispense with this guardianship and guidance, if they wish to live in peace and quiet, that they will acknowledge the autocracy of our ruler with a devotion bordering on deity worship, especially when they are convinced that those whom we appoint do not put themselves in place of authority, but only blindly execute his dictates. They will be rejoiced that we have regulated everything in their lives, in much the same way as wise parents who wish to train their children to be duty-bound and submissive. For, in regard to the secrets of our system of government, the peoples of the world are always throughout history only underage children, just as their governments are likewise. 21. As you see, I founded our despotism on right and duty. The right to compel the execution of duty is the direct obligation of a government which is a father for its subjects. It has the right of the strong, and the right to use that strength for the benefit of directing humanity towards that established order which is defined by nature, namely, submission. Everything in the world is in a state of submission, if not to man, then to circumstances or its own inner character. In all cases, everything is in submission to what is stronger. And so shall we be this something stronger for the sake of good. 22. We are obliged, without hesitation, to sacrifice individuals who commit a breach of established order, because the explicit punishment of evil makes a great educational program. 23. When the King of Israel sets the crown offered to him by Europe upon his sacred head, he will become patriarch of the world. The necessary victims created by him as a result of their suitability, for example as criminals, will never reach the number of victims created in the course of centuries by the mania of magnificence, by the jealous rivalry between the Goy governments. 24. Our king will be in constant communion with the peoples, making famous speeches to them from the pulpit, which will be distributed over the entire world within the hour.